Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you The Catholic Doctors, discussing medicine in light of church teaching. And now, The Catholic Doctors with Dr. Michael Parker and Dr. Will Turek.
Welcome to The Catholic Doctors Show, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. This is your co-host, Dr. Michael Parker, in studio with Dr. Will Turek, and on the phone with our favorite guest, Dr. Anthony Caruso. Tony, how are you today?
I'm well, Mike. How are you guys doing up there?
I'm doing wonderful.
How's the weather in Chicago?
It's good to be with you guys again.
Well, how's the weather in Chicago?
Get some rain, but it's, you know, summer's coming.
Yeah.
How about in Ohio?
It's beautiful here today, but, you know.
A day ahead of you.
That's right.
That's true. Right. Yeah. By this time, LeBron, I don't know who he's playing.
That's right.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think we sort of know who LeBron's playing.
Right? I think I know that too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm very thankful that we got past the Bulls.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Next year we'll get you.
Well, I don't know.
We can only hope. Doubles.
Remember, I'm a Celtics fan anyway.
Mm. Yeah, me too.
I kind of figured you were.
Since the days of Hondo.
Yeah, since I grew up there. Yeah.
Doubles.
I don't know that we'll see them again anytime soon in the NBA playoffs.
No. Nope.
In fact, many people think that they should probably be a topic of the debate we have for our show.
All right, now you have to introduce the topic.
Well, you know, we've talked about this topic before on the Catholic Doctor Show, and we're going to introduce it again today, kind of from a different perspective, and that is physician-assisted suicide and the current debate that's going on with that. And we've talked before about the side of, you know, why people are proponents of physician-assisted suicide and their reasons for that. And we explained the Catholic perspective of why physician-assisted suicide is immoral and wrong for physicians to be doing. But now we're going to talk about it from the perspective of protecting patients from physician-assisted suicide.
Right, because there's so many physicians who are ambivalent or are proponents. They're coming right out and saying, hey, you know, this is something that we should be willing to do, that there's good evidence to show that, you know, on, at least from their perspective, that this is a good thing for patients.
Well, I think it comes with a statistical bias in that respect, and
yeah,
that there probably are more physicians who are actually against physician assisted suicide.
So.
But the more vocal ones,
I would agree with you, because I really think that what you get is a silent majority.
Right. Yeah.
That would say, what are you talking about? But you get this very minor, very small number that actually hit the news and get attention.
Yeah.
That talk about whatever the pros are. You see.
Yeah. Right. No, that's true.
They tend to get the squeaky wheel that gets oiled.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the media likes to have this kind of debate out there because it stirs the news cycle and it gets people revved up and ready to go. But right now, there's 24 states who have under consideration physician-assisted suicide. And proponents of these bills claim that only those with less than 6 months to live would be allowed to avail themselves of doctors prescribed suicide. But the article that we're talking about comes from Maureen Ferguson, who works for the Catholic Foundation. It's Assisted Suicide Debate, Our Law Should Protect the Most Vulnerable Among Us. And she actually has a personal story about her grandmother, who was given only a few more hours, really, to live, who ended up recovering from the coma that she was in and went on to live another 2 years. And the physicians actually felt that she might benefit from just letting her go. She was
right in
hospice and everything else, and she went on to enjoy another stuff. And another prime example is the great senator from the state of Massachusetts, someone well known to Dr. Caruso.
Yeah, Ted Kennedy, who, he was diagnosed with brain cancer, and they gave him 6 months to live, and he wound up staying in the Senate 2 more years.
I know. And the interesting thing is that his wife was so vocal about this issue against physician-assisted suicide.
Right. And you know, and even in his example, I think that's a good one, because, you know, Ted Kennedy, remember when he went to, I can't remember which one of the Democratic conventions, he was all toked up with all kinds of medications and IVs,
right,
and got out there and gave a really rousing,
speech.
And I'm no fan,
yeah,
speech completely under treatment.
Yeah.
know, and so he didn't have to say it. He was basically an example of what, why assisted physician suicide really was not an option.
Exactly. Exactly.
I have to question how much of his Catholic faith came into play in that.
Well, I don't know. You know, so many people believe in science.
Right. Yeah.
And I think the science part is probably more than the Catholic faith.
Right.
And that kind of stuff. Because, you know, if he really had that kind of thing, he would have done other things, which he didn't do.
Right. Right.
Right.
Well, you know, not only, you know, we talked about this silent majority, but a very large organization, the American Medical Association, strongly opposes such bills as physician-assisted suicide, seeing it as fundamentally incompatible with the physician's role as healer, and it would be difficult or impossible to control and would pose a serious societal risk. But also, disability rights advocates are looking at this with great terror.
Absolutely. Right. Well, I mean, the thing is that if you are and one of the other articles that I reviewed for this is, came from LARCH, which is the organization up in Canada that mm-hmm. was started by a Catholic gentleman, and they have these homes where they live with folks with disabilities, mental disabilities, physical infirmities, and so forth, and they live it as a ministry, and they were very, very vocal. This particular gentleman, I can't remember his Jean, I can't think of his name. I will have to pull it up. But
yeah, I saw what you're talking about. But yeah, but I mean, there are those. They're not just in Canada. They're all over the United States.
Oh, yes.
These places where people live with their disabilities, they do like menial tasks, they get through the day. And realistically, their lives are so worthwhile to themselves and their families.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the case, you know. But then you get these big cases like Brittany Maynard.
Right.
You know,
right.
That actually caught the national, you know, zeitgeist for a while. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because she was young, she was pretty, she had a life ahead of her, and, you know, who knows how long she would have lived if she didn't do what she did.
Right, and the meaning of her life after that diagnosis can really be, you know, a profound thing and have an impact mm-hmm. on a lot of people. But unfortunately, she chose to use it for bad, for evil.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, and you know, and I understand, but you know, the best thing, and we don't have enough of these. When you see people who have experienced these kind of recommendations and gone against them, or even gone with them, of writing their stories or telling their stories,
right?
Because because you always get them ex parte, or you get them in a party, or you get them at a gathering. Both sides of how someone stayed with their diagnosis and lived so much longer, and was so was worthwhile to us, or the deep sense of loss that comes when these people lose their loved ones before they think their time.
Well, you know, the other thing that bothers me about this whole physician assisted suicide, and we can take it from we can hit it from a lot of different angles, is there's really a lack of hope. You know
right.
what I mean? It just robs you of any hope. I mean, even though, you know, you have a terminal diagnosis, even though you have MS or you have, you know, Hodgkin's or actually the one I was thinking of is Huntington's, which is,
right.
you know, very, very difficult diagnosis to have to deal with. And yet, you know, you take that away from somebody and say, well, okay, I want Dr. X to administer this cocktail of Versed and whatever and take my life when I want to do it, when I've
right.
said my goodbyes, when I've done all the things that I need to, I've said all the things I need to say, and it just robs you of all the hope that we are supposed, I mean, that's a theological virtue as a Catholic.
Exactly, and despair is one of the deadly sins.
Exactly,
and so I mean it's very, very hard, and you know, and actually this Maureen
Ferguson,
what's her name again?
Ferguson.
Maureen Ferguson. You know, she actually said what I fear is that first of all, we all have a terminal disease. It's called life.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, and realistically, when you have people who have depression, or you have diabetes, or you have any, you know, I get diagnosed with a hypertension that takes four drugs to put under
right.
care, or I have headaches, or whatever. Are all those now going to be situations where people can go to a doctor, get a couple of pills, and end it all?
Well, you know, the question that comes up to me is: would you walk up to it? Think of what would happen if you walked up to a teenager in high school who was depressed, and you said to him, you know, you ought to just commit suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah, they will.
You know, they will. And then we'll call it a tragedy and we'll think of it. But you'd probably be brought out, you know, scolded, reprimanded, lose your job, whatever. But yet we're doing the same things to these people. As she brings out, a group promoting physician-assisted suicide is still just promoting suicide. And suicide has always been recognized as a tragedy, you know, not something to be revered.
Right.
No.
And we're trying to change the view of that. And this, we're going to, when after we come back, I want to ask you both a question. And that question is very similar to what we have in with regards to the frozen embryo debate that we have right now. And that is, just because we can, one, should we? And two, if we don't really know what the answer is, should we be passing these laws and, you know, until we know more about the situation?
Yeah.
You're listening to The Catholic Doctor Show, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. You can find us on the Catholic Doctor Facebook page. You can also see our Twitter feed. At Catholic Doctor is our handle. We enjoy having you listen to the show. And if you have any comments or suggestions, you can leave those at those sites. Or if you'd like to have something brought up on our show, please feel free to go ahead and leave that there. We have Dr. Tony Caruso with us on the show, and we're talking about physician-assisted suicide and protecting the most vulnerable that are out there. So before the break, I asked the question, because we can, should we? And two, if we aren't really certain what the outcome or the effect is going to be from this, should we even be passing these laws? And Oregon is probably a prime example. They were the first state to legalize assisted suicide. And when you look at the results of that, you know, a lot of these cases really aren't cases that were terminal. And these are people who just are looking for a way for somebody to help them commit suicide. And many of them could have been helped with depression and other matters and gotten over these things.
Well, you know, I think that as we're contemplating these sorts of laws, I mean, it's like we're jumping off a cliff. You know, we're really not and not knowing where we're going to land. You know, I mean, it's because you know, when you think about, we were just talking about the idea of teenagers, you know, teenagers being impulsive, teenagers being, you know, impetuous and not thinking things through, not thinking the consequences through. I think that, you know, ultimately anybody with a terminal illness, no matter what age they are, is not thinking things clearly through. You know, I mean, they're not... And I guess that...
Well, your own self, when somebody brings this up to you, your own self-worth is questioned.
Absolutely.
And you see, and because, well, number one, you have to realize that when they pass these laws, they're not necessarily thinking about all the different consequences. They each one of the lawmakers thinks of a particular case that they thought in their head or something that was presented to them that really is the saddest of the cases that, you know, everyone would go, well, okay. But they don't realize that when they put it out there, all of a sudden it's going to just expand. And when you're being told, when you bring it up, as you're being vilified, it's not because of the idea. It's because everyone else has their idealized situation in their head of, well, if I got to this stage, I wouldn't want to live anymore.
Right. Well, everybody has those situations where they just, you know, they've seen a case where somebody is suffering and they go, well, I'll tell you what, I'm never going to let it get that bad.
Well, you know, I find those kind of statements to be almost laughable because, you know, we always make the statement, well, if that guy comes at me, I'm going to kick his butt, you know, and then that guy comes at you and what do? You run in terror. Or, you know, you have the situation, you know, where if I was faced with a situation and my wife was dying, I wouldn't let her live like that. Yeah, you end up sitting by her bedside, holding her hand, cleaning up after her, spending every last valuable moment that you can because you don't want to let her
praying
go.
Praying for a miracle.
Right. Because you don't want to let her go.
But you see, that's because you have a certain level of belief.
Right.
And I have a certain level of belief. I'm all in. But you have so many people who are agnostic or they don't know what they believe or they've walked away or whatever. And they may still do those things for a time. But then they're going to go into hospice, and there's nothing wrong with hospice, but then they're going to be wishing that their loved one be comfortable.
Right.
And that word comfortable mean something completely different to a doctor who believes in assisted suicide.
Well, it's just like when you know the fifth vital sign. You know, everybody talks about the fifth vital sign. How much pain are you in? 0 to mm-hmm. 10. You know, which I mean, for those who are not doctors or nurses out there, the fifth vital sign drives us all nuts. Okay, because it's subjective. Because you don't, I mean, nobody
there's no
knows.
Objective way to measure it.
There's no objective way to measure it. They've tried, like the Dickens, to try to make it objective, and it's not. It's just not. You know, you have to gauge it from one visit to the next, and person, to, and within that one person. So, but the thing is that you know how much suffering is too much suffering. And that's a very subjective thing. We've done a show on Salvavici Dolores a long time ago. It's been a long time ago now, right, Mike?
It's outside my short-term memory.
My gosh. And we talked about John Paul's apostolic exhortation on Salvavici Dolores on human suffering.
Okay.
And I felt like that was... I got a lot out of that.
Well, I think that the John Paul II offers that vision of what dying with dignity really is.
Sure,
where, you know, and you compare what we had two things happening in 2004. We had Terry Schiavo,
right,
who was, right. you know, not causing any harm to anybody, but was in a vegetative state, if they want to call it that.
She was alive,
but she was alive, and they allowed her to starve to death. To cause her death because somebody else didn't want her to be continued on these life support measures. Whereas you had John Paul II, who has the world in front of him, and he is, we know that he's dying, but he's not, he's doing till his last day. He's taking water through an IV. He's taking antibiotics to help cure an infection. He's praying. He's living a fulfilled life and waiting for the moment that the good Lord takes him up. Mm-hmm. And those are examples of what dying should be or should be like. You should be surrounded by your loved ones and allowed to pass comfortably, I guess, so to speak, but in a natural way. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to this, you mentioned something, Tony, about people who don't have that inner faith or that inner calling. Mm-hmm. It becomes very easy for them to look at it from their perspective,
exactly.
Rather than, as we're called, seeing Christ in the suffering servant, you know, or seeing in the suffering child.
Well, you know, it's the thing of it is that when you look at it from the outside, when you see a person who's suffering and you have this sense of compassion, you know, you say, gosh, I feel awful for you. The word compassion means with. You know, to with passion, so you walk with someone else in their suffering. So,
exactly.
You know, the thing of it is that we're not really doing that at all. when someone
is because we don't get taught, we don't get shown, and we don't get the perspective of Christ's suffering.
No,
we never look at the cross and think to ourselves, my gosh. That level of suffering is so much more than anything that we will ever experience.
Well, yeah. And
he did that for us.
Willingly, without reservation. In fact, he happily did it. Some theologians would argue that he would do it all over again for each and every one of us. And he did it. You know, some have said that was the most active he was ever in his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the process of redeeming us. So, I mean, and to take that one step further, I mean, think about, you know, some theologians have argued that God becoming a man was what confounded Satan, that he was like, these are like ants. These are less than ants. They're worms. They're mm-hmm. maggots. And you're going to become one of them in order to redeem them. They're not worth it. They're not. It's not even necessary, and yet you know he was willing to do that for us. So mm-hmm. the thing of it is, the amount of suffering that he endured for us with his humanity was so much more than even if we were to have to go through that, because he was so exalted in his divinity.
Right. So, but it teaches us to pick up our cross. And,
yeah.
And the people who have these terminal diseases and their families and loved ones,
Right.
Have a very special cross.
Yeah.
That they have to hold on, they have to love, and they have to move forward with it to that last day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and bringing something in that short circuits it, or lessen, I don't know, whatever, you know, short circuit's the best word.
Right.
Is really something that just takes that cross away from everybody.
Yeah.
Well, are we, if someone partakes of physician-assisted suicide, what are they denying their family? Other than the time spent, you know, that could have had good memories or anything else, what are they denying the family?
Well, in the economy of salvation, they're denying them the opportunity to receive grace from their dying. We've done a show on when my mother died, okay? That was probably one of the most grace-filled events of my entire life, you know, excusing my marriage and my children being born. Mm-hmm. That was the most spiritual experience I can ever imagine outside of the Mass.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when my mother-in-law passed away, I probably mentioned this before, if my wife had not been there to help my mother-in-law through that process, even though at times it was very difficult for her and my mother-in-law may have said things that were not necessarily making my wife feel good, if that had not happened, I don't know that my wife would have come through that process with the proper healing and the proper grieving factor.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I compare that to the opposite effect of when my father died in hospice. And I was in first year medical school. I engrossed myself in my medical school, so I didn't have to deal with it.
With the spiritual aspects of this.
And my healing process took much, much longer.
Right.
Took much, much greater. There was a lot more resentment, a lot more anger, a lot more regret that I hadn't spent more time with him. You know, hearing my brothers and sisters tell stories that I never knew about because I wasn't there to hear them. You know, taking those things and not experiencing them, you lose that wealth of life, that vitality that's necessary there.
You know, what did St. Francis call it, you know? Our sister death. We have a Franciscan, third order Franciscan running the board for us. Sister death. I mean, you know, obviously... death is something to be overcome. Christ's suffering and death overcomes death. But the thing is that St. Francis so eloquently understood the idea and talked about the idea that that death is a necessary part of life.
Exactly. And, you know, and guys, when my mother died, I watched over the process of my mother dying of Alzheimer's. And seeing the changes in healing in my father, and what I saw in that experience was my father have renewal of his own life through my mother's death, which, you know, we don't really think about it from that perspective, that the memories are the most powerful things that we have of each other, and those memories can drive us forward and deepen our faith.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? And that was what was so beautiful about that experience.
Or it can drive it down. I mean, if you're devoid of hope, if you're just if you've been taken that goodness. We used to talk about a holy death. You know, we prayed for a holy death. Saint Joseph is the patron of a holy death. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what Catholics used to talk about. You know, we pray in the Hail Mary every time we pray. You know, pray for us now at the hour of death. I mean, that's the most important point of our lives. And St. Benedict talks about look towards your death. Look towards judgment. Why is this not something we have an understanding of today? I don't know.
Kill me now.
Stop. I need to stop yelling and waving my arms.
Well, I guess we have about 2 minutes left. I want to ask a question to the two of you.
Uh-oh.
Is the genie out of the bottle, or can we get this back? Are we too far down the road with physician-assisted suicide, or is it something that we can turn the tide on?
Mm. Well, I would say that there is no such thing as a genie in this situation that couldn't be pushed back if there was a revival of the culture.
Right.
However, I do believe, and this is it may not be the best thing, but I do believe that there's going to be a counterculture that's going to become its own culture, a subculture, that's going to have to survive first.
Right.
And in that subculture are going to be people who don't accept things like physician-assisted suicide.
I mean, God ultimately leaves us to the designs of our own hearts.
Right.
God allows us to pursue our sin. And this is sin. Make no mistake about it. Demons have names. And one of those names is euthanasia or whatever euphemistic language, physician-assisted suicide. If you want to put a name on it, that's what that demon's name is. And cultures can have a demon, and this one is it. Unfortunately, you know, we're going to have to, I mean, exemplify a holy death. I mean, remember Saint Therese of Lisieux. She begged for more suffering as she's coughing up her lungs. She begged, my God, I wish I could suffer more for souls. Right. That's what we need to exemplify. We need to show that example.
Well, Tony, I think you're right. I think there is going to be a, you know, things like this have been happening throughout history with the Greek, with the Romans, a number of different societies. It's not something that we haven't seen before. And I think you're absolutely right that there is going to be a subculture that will survive. There will be many martyrs to the cause, and eventually the recognition that there is a God and it's not us will happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and then that culture will grow, and it will take over the full culture.
It will have to.
But that will take a generation or two.
Sure. Absolutely.
Well, Tony, we want to thank you again for coming on the Catholic Doctor Show, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. Until next week, we hope your week is happy, healthy, and holy.
God bless.
The Catholic Doctors is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of The Catholic Doctors with Dr. Michael Parker and Dr. Will Turek are available at stgabrielradio.com.